Oh, crap. That's like the end of a day.
Into a horrible day. And then the most iconic shot, which
yeah.
Maxim Magazine...
Honey shot!
Maxim Magazine actually put in their one of their 100 greatest movie moments, and in the little caption that followed it, they said Saddam Hussein probably replays that shot over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably now more so.
That's brutal. Anyway. That's brutal. Yeah, this is some scary stuff.
This really is.
I love that shot right there. You can get a sense of the destruction as it goes out in the center. That's pretty sweet. Didn't have to do that shot, but that shot really does add.
No. They didn't. And you have the Capitol building just
incinerated.
Dang. It is kind of hard to believe Air Force One could possibly outrun this.
Well, it is Air Force One.
It is Air Force One.
It's the most advanced airplane in the world.
Yeah. But you don't have Harrison Ford
flying
in it.
No, you don't.
Yeah. At least yet.
Supposedly, according to the movie Air Force One, the actual plane could withstand a nuclear blast. Is that true?
I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah.
I guess I could kind of see that.
Still be flying and survive a nuclear blast, but I mean, like survive a nuclear blast, like on the ground.
Yeah.
Probably not.
Okay.
Yeah, now here's
winds.
Here's where the moviegoer's intelligence just goes out the door, and all we care about is a stupid dog.
Right. Well, we don't really.
You kill a dog in a movie, you lose a substantial part of the gross.
Yeah.
If they hadn't killed the dog in Lost World, that would have been the all-time record breaker.
Probably. Mm-hmm.
And if they hadn't killed two dogs and Signs, it probably would have made twice as much as it did.
Right.
I know, but...
I thought this was a little cheesy, you know.
A
dog jumping in.
But you are into this at this point.
I was into it because...
Ever since Old Yeller died in the movie Old Yeller,
right.
I mean, you have to figure that it's like people really hate seeing dogs die.
I'm certain that's why, you know, Where the Red Fern Grows wasn't a big hit, because, you know, but, you know, that's how the book ends, so. Anyway.
I mean, yeah, this is a corny moment. This is very much...
That's
disaster.
A sin's tale right there, is it not?
Yeah.
That's a...
I mean, this is the most sobering shot after 9/11. I mean, you know, you have the Statue of Liberty...
I like how
which is an obvious reference to Planet of the Apes.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Twin Towers still standing, stunning.
Yeah, that is kind of
I don't see how they could have done it, but anyway. But on fire. And,
I like how the three different acts are broken up with the dates.
Yeah.
I think that's for
sure. Well, I mean, that's how they did in the marketing campaign, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
obviously.
They broke it, like... July 2nd,
they arrive.
July 3rd, they attack. Although technically, it wasn't
necessarily July 4th, the day we fight back. But yeah, I for some reason I actually really do like that, the way that the acts are broken up. It's something that didn't exactly register at first, but then when I became as slowly but surely as I became a more intelligent moviegoer.
I just absolutely love the music in this part. It's very subtle. I mean, it could have been overblown melodramatic strings and huge swelling orchestral stuff, but it's very intimate, very, very melancholy, and all the more poignant.
The advantage of being a fighter pilot.
Lone Star. Oh, sorry. Had to put a Spaceballs reference in there somewhere. I mean,
I'm your father's brother's cousin's former roommate.
Father's brother's cousin's sister's brother's former roommate, I think it is. But anyway. Besides, I don't know any quotes from While You Were Sleeping. Or at least saying that would qualify to be said here.
There's a destruction there.
Yeah, how did they... How exactly did they survive that?
I don't know.
It would have been very hard to survive that. Yeah, give. Well, I mean, I guess I could kind of buy it. I guess I could kind of buy it because, I mean,
yeah, and there were people that said they survived it because they were in the subway. The subway. And,
I mean, you know, if so. I mean, I can kind of see it, but I mean, at the same time, it's like, yeah, you sort of stretch your, you know, I mean, you really do have to stretch your suspension of disbelief.
What happened, in this mommy? Movie,
but
what happened, mommy? Yeah. Weren't you here the whole time? I mean, wasn't that kid like, you know? This is a little bit of a trailer moment here.
Yeah.
One of the more popular.
Not this moment, but the next moment.
One of the more popular moments from the trailer, anyway. One of the things that I think really sold it, along with the White House being blown up.
He teased me. These guys are. He's not.
You all get your chance to die.
Kick the tires, light the fires.
That's actually really the first time I'd heard that said, but I mean, obviously it's a favorite thing to say. Mm-hmm.
Top Gun!
Sorry. Well, yeah, there's a lot of Top Gun here, too. It would really impress how David Arnold got the key right to where Harry Connick Jr. was singing. How the key of the music was right on target with what Connick Jr. was saying.
This is one of my favorite elements here, is the idea of our technology versus theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, how insignificant our technology is to the aliens.
Right. Yeah.
There's a real story there of how we get to the point where we can stand up to their technology.
Human resourcefulness type aspect of it that you see in a lot of science fiction movies, but it was pretty well done here.
And you know, the thing is we don't see us kicking, you know, the aliens' butts right away.
Yeah.
You see us fail miserably first, mm-hmm. which is something I really liked. It's quite a sad moment when.
This is one of my favorite uses of this theme. And I love it how one of the reasons I really love this theme is it works as a love theme, it works as a heroic theme,
and a poignant theme,
and a patriotic theme.
Mm-hmm.
And it just works on all of those levels. I mean, that is the. When you hear somebody do so many different things with a theme like that, it's just so refreshing. And that's the reason that I've always really loved Dave for this movie. I mean, he's been
scoring the last couple of James Bond movies.
Yeah, which I'll admit I've been sort of underimpressed by. I mean, admittedly, the last
Fire
Bond
Will?
Score,
Will Smith, what? Fire Will Smith, what?
Who's Fire when
Will?
They say that in
Who's
Star
Will?
Wars, I would go, "Who's Will? Who's Will, sir?"
Yeah, here we start to see, like, you know, but like you see us just fail miserably,
mm-hmm.
and that's just that's a neat effect.
Yeah,
the shield effect,
mm-hmm.
and Will Smith's you know, comments on, you know, he grounds everything. He's like. That's some scary shit right there. It's like,
he did not shoot that green shit at me.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like
jumping the gun, but
he totally, you know, he just brings a reality to it all, you know, because I mean, mm-hmm. otherwise this would have been.
Oh yeah, I mean all of the main actors, you know, certainly Pullman, Goldblum, and Will Smith all ground their characters to where we can really. I mean, we can really sympathize with these characters, and we can really, you know, look at them, not necessarily as better than us, but sort of on the same level as us. You know, these are guys who are, you know, I don't know exactly how to explain it to where it makes more sense than that, but, not shoot that green shit at me.
F-18s right there. They used to replace the F-16 as their America's number one fighter that goes out. All-purpose fighter, I have to say.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what are these again, Dave?
They're F-18s.
Now, are the F-15s, are those the two-man fighter pilots? Fighter planes?
They can be. I think the F-15E is a two-man fighter plane. The F-14 Tomcat, that's considered a two-man fighter. That's the one you see in Top Gun.
Yeah.
The F-15s are the ones that are guarding Air Force One. But the F-18 is the main all-purpose fighter, and it's replaced the F-16. The F-16 is a single turbine. These guys are dual turbine.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get fast.
This is another one of those shots in the preview where you just really, what the hell?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they really did a very good job of selling this movie. You know, they knew
they gave us just enough.
They gave it a unique. You could see that it was very much a group of cliches, science fiction cliches, but at the same time, they do feel fresh.
Mm-hmm.
In their own way,
and the trailers gave you just enough.
Yeah, they really did keep a lot of stuff from you, which was really smart. Mm-hmm.
Well, all they did really was show you a whole bunch of money shots and I don't remember too many of the stars of this movie being involved with the trailers.
You got glimpses of them. I mean, you know, especially like Will Smith, I think, was the one you probably got the.
Well, I think
and Bill Pullman, but
the actor I remember the most from the trailers is probably Bill Pullman because of they showed some of the speech. But this is right here. This is another great.
Gosh, that was just a great scene.
Money shot.
Yeah,
this is just. Good. This says so much right here.
That's the F-16.
Oh, gosh, look at that. Dang.
I mean, there really is some spectacular effects work in this movie. I mean, just terribly impressive. I mean, the fact of the matter is, they made this film for like $70 million,
mm-hmm.
which nowadays is like...
Yeah,
it's a mid-range movie nowadays. I mean... Most films run about 100, 150 on a regular basis.
David Arnold music is great here.
Oh, yeah. God.
Great.
I love what he does in the action score stuff. The adventure music. This really is an adventure score. I mean...
That was a mile.
I don't know. Personally, like I was trying to say earlier, I haven't been terribly enthralled with his... working on the Bond films, but I love this score.
Mm-hmm.
I really think the last really great Bond score was GoldenEye by Eric Serra, and I don't really remember.
This
a whole
is pretty
lot
resourceful
about
right here.
Yeah,
this is.
I mean, this is one of those
this
ones
is
where you can
super
see.
I just love that I was just screaming.
Yeah. Now, I love the audacity. Of Will Smith's character in this. I just love the fact that
it's typical Will Smith, too.
It's become typical Will Smith. I mean, at the time, we'd really only seen him in this sort of role with Bad Boys.
Right.
I mean, we've seen him in
Fresh Prince. That's where he, I think, kind of defined his character. Of course, he was defined all the way back when he was doing Running Wild, But he finally got to express himself.
I love this.
That's right.
I love how cocky he is.
Ship all banged up.
And his ship's like destroyed.
Wait until we get another plane. I love this. This, ladies and gentlemen, is when Will Smith became a movie star.
Yeah.
This scene right here. That's my favorite line in the movie.
That's what I call a close encounter. Well, that Will Smith is able to knock him out with one punch.
The fact that he was able to get in one punch,
but then the exact same alien takes on 20
guys with guns.
20 yeah. guys with, yeah, later on.
My favorite line is actually coming up, but it does still involve Will Smith and the alien.
For some reason, I'm always reminded of Terminator 2 and these sequences here with Vivek A. Fox and her son like walking around the wreckage. I'm always reminded of Terminator 2. But yeah, so there's the kid who, you know, we think the only reason he's sick is because he's overwhelmed by everything that's going on.
Yeah,
I don't think it's even explained what the sickness is. And,
It really doesn't explain what the sickness is, but, I mean, he... Actually, there's a really good line coming up with Judd Hirsch. I mean, it really makes no sense whatsoever. It's very funny. Sorry, we're just watching.
Yeah, well, you know, we get a little bit of the backstory.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, this is kind of a...
Yeah, this is when you finally really do reveal that, you know, well, I mean, it was revealed earlier on,
You get hints of the fact of the matter is,
you know, again, there was no estrangement between the two characters. It was just, you know... Shut in the back. Very sad.
I mean, they acknowledge on the commentary how that line really makes no sense whatsoever.
Right. Yeah.
I mean... It is a very ludicrous line, but it's very funny. I mean, they're right. I mean, what happened to Lennon was sad.
I mean, NORAD is essentially a mountain made of steel. Mm-hmm. So the fact that they can take that out is actually a...
Pretty impressive.
Yeah. Really, really impressive. Supposed to add more weight to the destructive power.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, you know, they don't, you know, after the essential destruction that happens on July 2nd, all you ever hear about, you know, you only hear about it afterwards.
Yeah, you don't really see it.
Which, you know, you don't need to. We go from one really interesting, exciting action sequence to another completely different, interesting, and then exciting action sequence, you know, having to do with something that doesn't have anything to do with, you know, citywide ships blowing up entire, you know, you go from that to something completely different and fresh.
Yeah.
All you really need to do is hear about it, and, you know, you believe it because you just saw it, like, 10 minutes ago.
Right, and also, I mean, this is the Right, and, I mean, this is this middle part here, right before the, end action sequence of the movie. I mean, this is where you really focus on the characters.
Yeah, you do.
Which
there isn't that much action in between now and the very end.
This is one of my favorite lines right here, or one of my favorite scenes. Excuse me,
not entirely accurate. And then Jeff Goldblum's what? Which part?
Look at his eyes.
Yeah.
That's a tough rod right there.
Now they did make a very smart cut here by taking out this sort of
the end is near kind of guy.
Yeah.
Like, okay,
I mean, they didn't need that. Kind of get the impression that it's like, yeah, we get
I
it.
I think the end already happened, actually.
Yeah.
Amazing. Does that mean people survive?
That's Matthew Perry's father, I believe.
Okay.
If I remember correctly.
From what is the boy? It's the first lady? What?
Timmy's trapped in the well and he can't get out? That's Lassie, by the way. But chances are you've already heard that joke a million times.
Did they take out the scene where they were talking?
What?
Huh?
Have you even seen
that? That's later.
Have you even seen the director's cut version? What are you talking with your dreadlocks sticking in your back?
I love the fact that he's just dragging this thing along.
And, you know, for the most part, I think, what the hell is that smell?
These are probably my favorite lines.
A lot of this was improvised.
I could have made a barbecue.
Sorry. I am mad.
I like how you're not quite sure what this is that's coming towards him.
Well, the thing is, with the commentary, kind of obvious, okay, the commentary says something very, I think, kind of cheesy, and it says, I think Dean Devlin mentions that, you know, I think he says that this was meant to be almost kind of a fake out.
Yeah.
That you think that's something that
these
it's not.
These are more aliens, and then.
Well, you know, I'm like, well, you know, that's kind of insulting, because a lot of the commentary is pretty interesting, but again, a lot of it is pretty, you know, kind of self-congratulatory and kind of like winking back at the camera. It's like, ha, we fooled him here, we, you know, and I'm like, okay, good for you. I'm happy for you. I'm just glad that I got to see a really neat movie. You know what I mean? I'm like, I could care less whether or not you're proud of yourselves for fooling the audience here or faking people out here or, you know, or blowing people away here.
Yeah.
That's because I have a real love-hate relationship with commentaries and you know, because, you know, we get.
sorry, but...
They can get pretty self-congratulatory, and I get kind of annoyed by that. But at the same time, I can't get enough of them.
Well, obviously.
I really, you know...
So you're going to keep talking.
Yeah, I am.
Right?
You can't shut me up.
Okay.
Don't even
back
try.
Back to what I was going to start to say. This guy here is Adam Baldwin, made of Joss Whedon's recent endeavor into science fiction, Firefly. Very underrated endeavor into science, a lot of people thought. little thing about the use of Area 51. When they went to the military to get...
I was going
to
say that.
Yeah, get permission to use some of the uniforms and stuff like that.
Right.
The military basically insisted that every reference to Area 51 be cut out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's like, but it's such a huge important part of the story.
Exactly. I mean, they would not sign off on anything.
Yeah.
None of it.
I don't get what's so funny about that line. That line gets an enormous laugh.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's so funny about it. I've never laughed at that line.
Well, I mean, you know, because...
Data.
Data.
Brent Spiner.
Yeah. Who was actually in Phenomenon with John Travolta, which actually opened the exact same weekend this did, too.
Yeah.
So. Gee. Really?
This is like...
I think they overdo the sort of craze... professor thing a bit too much.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been worse.
It could have been a lot more painful.
Like,
but
anyway.
But yeah, now it does get in the way just a tad.
Yeah.
This is a really great Gee Whiz moment.
Yeah.
By the way, the Gee Whiz moment, the Gee Whiz factor in this movie does not run out.
No, it doesn't.
And there's so few movies out now that are meant to contain that element, but don't.
Right.
Yeah.
And This
is really one of the great popcorn flicks. I mean, one of the great summer movies. I mean, it's not necessarily in its own right. It's a great entertainment, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons is because it has so many of these things that's like, ooh, cool.
Yeah, exactly. And it's done so well, and it's done with such good intention. You know, it's not done to get a cheap laugh or get a cheap thrill out of you. It's done with the best intentions.
Otherwise, we probably will have seen the original ending.
Yeah. Well, yes. Thank you.
Which we'll talk about.
We'll get to. We will definitely.
But anyway,
people are dying out there. I don't think there's anything very exciting about that.
Okay.
I mean, as an engineer, I can appreciate the professor's point of view, you know, because you're kind of all in your own little world, you know, things are happening, but, you know, and you're kind of out of touch with reality. I think that showing that right there was pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things where it's like, you know, you sort of, you see where both people are coming from. You know, you see where Bill Pullman's character is obviously coming from, and you see where the professor is coming from.
Yeah. Obviously.
This is kind of like a... It's pretty obvious that this room was built just for this. Which is kind of funny to me. It's kind of like, what did they use this room for? What did they use
One
this...
One of us. One of us. That's from the movie Freaks, by the way. Which I've never seen, but I've heard referenced countless times.
What was this room used for prior to this? That's what I want to
know. Probably absolutely nothing.
Probably, you know, I mean... This room was built specifically... I always laugh at that for some reason.
Now here you see the aliens, what they look like. Obviously referencing the aliens in the aliens here.
And a little bit tapping a little bit into the already existing mythology of what, you know, actual aliens supposedly really look like. Which, you know, I can tell you from my abduction experience that, you know, they look nothing like this.
That would explain a lot, except for the fact that it's probably not the case.
Sexual experiments.
Anyway. I like the fact that the aliens don't talk.
Right.
Or
do you?
Don't speak like...
Well, any good alien movie, I think...
Because
you know,
of the fact that it's like, okay, we... You know, I mean, there
any good alien flick, you know, the aliens aren't gonna, you know, exactly, you know, be able to, you know, say, you know, this is my plan, this is what I'm gonna do to you, you know, be your typical villain.
I like the fact that they have to. Well, I'm getting a bit ahead of myself.
The idea that they communicate telepathically was a little over the top for me. But at the same time...
I don't know. I mean, I
think it was a fresher idea.
Yeah.
It was one of the few things in this movie that I had a little hard time buying.
Well, I mean, I think it adds to...
I mean, you don't really see it utilized. I mean, it's basically just...
Yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of...
You never see them really talking to each other, but, you know, that's kind of a good thing.
Between, like, humans and aliens, you know, it's just...
Yeah.
You know, just adds to that barrier.
Let's just leave this here with you.
Sort of like a mix between the alien and Predator.
Yeah, that's very true. Right.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And notice the biplane is still there.
Yeah.
Which is
that figures prominently into the
alternate ending.
Which
I love how they're like making such a big deal out of this alien, you know, being half alive, half dead. It's kind of like ER all of a sudden. Give me 20 cc's of morphine.
Stat!
I'm losing him! Give me the paddle!
Damn it, man!
I'm losing him! Give me the paddle! Clear!
Okay. Anyway.
You look rough.
Okay, we're
Atlanta,
getting
Chicago,
a bit off.
And what else?
Philadelphia, I think.
That's right. So kind of like a acknowledgement of Randy Quaid's
thing that they've been studying for years.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of like a... Thank you, Mr. Loggia. Is it Loggia or is it Loggia?
It's probably Loggia.
That's what I thought.
I would think
you
it
referred
was
to him as Mr. Loggia earlier.
Yeah, it's probably Loggia.
One of the perks of being the president, I'd like to go see it.
Yeah.
Now, thank you.
Please. Well, he doesn't need to say please. He's the president. No, I just got here.
This is some really powerful second act.
Yeah.
This
thing with Will Smith and Vivica A. Fox is really well done.
And then it's just hammering home.
Because of the fact that you've already established
The love story.
The love story. You established it exceptionally well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't, like, come out of absolute nowhere. And, I mean, you don't... It's not that you don't feel it. You do feel it in the beginning of this movie. And so...
And each other thinks
feel
that...
For both of them, because mm-hmm. they're not sure whether the other one's alive or dead. And they just sort of assume the worst.
Some very heartbreaking music here as well.
And David Arnold. Can't say enough about his score on this. It really is great. Is this the scene you were talking about, Dave?
Yeah. Wow, I haven't seen the movie in a while. Okay, I was like, sure. It's been a while since I've seen
it. Yeah.
Godzilla toy.
Foreshadowing to their... Probably looks nothing like Godzilla.
That's one of the creatures that Godzilla battles, is it not? I'm not too terribly familiar with the old Godzilla fare, but
nor am I.
But
I've seen the original. I've seen bits and pieces of the other ones, but that's about it.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting that Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich used John Williams in The Patriot as opposed to David Arnold.
David Arnold?
Yeah. Because he scored Stargate, he scored Independence Day, he scored Godzilla.
He probably did Universal Soldier, mm-hmm. too.
But and you would think...
He's probably going to be doing their next one. I don't remember what the name of their next one's called, but I think it's coming
out. Yeah, for some reason they went with John Williams, which, I mean, who did a... fine job on The Patriot.
Yeah. Probably because he's John
Williams.
Screw
up, it's all on tape.
Probably because, I mean, he is John Williams.
Well, the thing is, a filmmaker, you know.
I think with The Patriot, you were dealing with a lot of the same people who were involved with Saving Private Ryan. I mean, you had the same writer.
You had the same screenwriter.
So, I mean, I think some of the producers were similar, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I think that probably.
I'm very ashamed to say that I jumped here in the theater.
A lot of people jumped.
I'm very ashamed. This is kind of like a cheap scare, but it works.
It works. This is sort of an homage to Alien 2, the original, not any of the sequels. The original, that famous scene where it comes out of John Hurt's chest.
A little less graphic, of course.
Yeah. Seeing as though this is a PG-13 movie. Ugh. God, it's creepy. I like it.
The hand is moving.
The hand is moving.
Uh-oh. I would be...
I mean, I'd be running.
Yeah.
We have the Borg. Resistance is futile. Oh, wait. Wrong movie.
Yeah. Wrong science fiction franchise.
Well, the first contact, the Borg... The first contact, Star Trek, That's probably my favorite
Next Generation?
Yeah.
I think that's actually the last Star Trek movie I've seen. I haven't seen.
Well, you do not need to see Insurrection. You do not need to see Nemesis either. So you're good on. Generations and Tech were great.
I have to admit, when I saw it in the theater and when I listen to it now, it always for some reason reminds me of Howard Shore's music for Seven. Anybody who's familiar with that movie. In that score, it is very similar to Seven. I wonder if they tenth track this scene to that music, which is beautifully evocative and quite disturbing. But
this was,
I can see that being tracked into here.
This is actually parodied in a pretty funny moment in Muppets from Space. I have to point that out because it's more useless movie knowledge. But
God, I can't remember that.
This is actually parodied.
I mean, I saw it and I enjoyed it. Still.
This is actually pretty parodied pretty brilliantly in Muppets from Space.
Great. Now I'm going to be thinking about writing Muppets from Space again.
You don't need to. Anyone who's listening does not.
I mean, I've seen it. I mean, I thought it was a cute movie.
It's not the. It's not. Although it has a cameo by Katie Holmes in it, so you know it's worth renting right there. But that's worth your price of admission right there. But how did we get into Muppets from Space?
You brought it up.
Oh, that's right.
I didn't bring it up. You did.
No peace.
This guy really does sound like the Predator. I mean, when you hear him, finally hear him sort of speak at the end. And there's another sort of
that's
quasi-reference to Predator, which actually is another Fox movie, later in the movie.
That's kind of creepy right there. Yeah. The close-up of the alien's face, he's just saying, I just want you to die. That's kind of scary. Now, this is such a kick-ass moment. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
That glass bulletproof.
I love this story. I don't think this part's on this.
Just a cheer right here.
Yeah.
I love that moment.
Shoot.
When he didn't even say shoot him, he used to ask if that glass bulletproof.
Is that glass bulletproof? It's such a kick-ass moment.
I don't think that piece of music's on the soundtrack, but if you
the soundtrack is very choppy, I feel.
Yeah. The soundtrack album is. It really is.
It's very choppy.
Kind of disappointing that it doesn't have a lot more music, but if you... Let's put it this way. For some music similar to this, buy the 7 soundtrack and listen to Howard Shore's... the two pieces Howard Shore has, because it is very similar to this music. And it's very good how it's sort of referenced. I don't think it was necessarily intentional, but this atmosphere is the same.
Let's nuke the bastards. This is another thing that I kind of like when it came to Dean, I'm going to mention the commentary again, but when it comes to Dean Devlin and Roland Emmerich's commentary, Dean Devlin especially, he was like, you know, and a lot of people in their movies, they go right to nuking, you know, and I'm kind of proud of the fact that we didn't nuke the aliens right away, and I'm like, you know, oh, good for you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of like, you know, they're proud of the fact that they didn't, you know, they didn't use nuclear warheads, you know, right off the bat. I'm like,
that's what best looking at for them.
Good for you. And, you know, you guys know what I mean, though?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, if you listen to the commentary, you're going to be like, okay. So anyway, I mean, I was entertained by it. I mean, I felt like I got my $8 worth. So, yeah.
I mean,
is it really worth mentioning that, you know, you're proud of the fact that, you know, you didn't use nukes right away? I mean, that's kind of like,
I don't know. I didn't necessarily get that feeling off.
I didn't necessarily. Would there be a side of alcohol at Area 51? I wonder.
Well,
look at that little mini bar.
Then they got a party because you know they just rediscovered some new stack of dust that was so amazing. they got some drinks.
Again, acknowledging that there was no real estrangement between these two characters. You know,
there was a certain degree of estrangement. I mean, she did leave
to
him. It's not that she left him for
because she didn't love him.
Another, yeah.
It's not like she. But, well, you know, again, it's
at the same time. I mean, it's not necessarily. You know, I mean, they weren't exactly on good terms.
Right.
At the start of the movie, either.
Well, it wasn't. But the fact of the matter is, it wasn't because they'd stopped loving each other.
Yeah.
All you need is love. John Lennon, smart man, shot in the back, very sad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, look at that laugh. What a brilliant one.
I got something I got him. I'm just borrowing it.
What a badass. Yeah. I mean, this really is the movie that I think cemented the Will Smith persona.
The B2? I can't remember.
That's a model right there.
Probably, because I think they had B2s on Broken Arrow, too.
Yeah, okay.
So, I think they're the same ones.
Oh, I thought Broken Arrow was F-117A. No, Broken Arrow was B2.
Yeah.
F-117A.
Gosh.
See if I remember.
That's kind of brutal right there.
Yeah.
It's
Civilian casualty should be down to a minimum.
It's interesting that, you know, the nuclear weapon is not a weapon, so, you know, we always roll that out at some point in time. But
yeah.
It's interesting to see what they would do nowadays, because this whole idea of shields and lasers, I mean, there's actually a lot of research that's been done on that. And so, I mean, we're at the point right now where we could mount a laser onto the bottom of an airplane and start firing it. You know, there are shields out there now, too. Mm-hmm. So it would be interesting to see nowadays, you know, what would be the top technology that we would just kind of throw out there.
Enter the two government officials to take Dave away and to work on
that. This has all been published.
Come with us. Come with us, sir. Thank you.
This has all been published.
They, like, started, like, smashing all the recording equipment. I can just, anyway.
Yeah.
Deploy. That's a go. Again, this is not, like, a real action sequence. This is kind of like a story moment more than it is anything else. It's just, you know, us working our way through the technology. And us, you know, again... The humans, again, failing. It's kind of like a...
Yeah, just sort of seeing what we can...
Again,
see if we can get anything to work.
Seeing what we're capable of with, you know, actually...
Yeah.
You know, seeing the levels that we sink ourselves to see what we can't do to... Again, but you know, this is something that could have very easily slowed the movie down. But thanks to the storytelling elements used here, I mean, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's something that just keeps you compelled until the actual next big action sequence.
I mean, like I said, this movie does work for a moment. I mean, it pretty much goes at a sprint to start out with and basically stays there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what do we do now?
Yeah.
You are feeling it, though. You're feeling the weight of, you know...
The decision. I mean, there's really no conflict in the decision. It doesn't work one time. Chances are it's not going to work another time. And, this is one of those things where, I mean, I think they kind of did overdo it on the commentary saying, oh, yeah, people, you know, you start to think, oh, maybe it's the aliens and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm like, oh.
I kind of always figured it was Will Smith.
Yeah, exactly. There's some moments in the commentary intelligence is just insulted. I'm sorry. But this is the MTV Movie Awards Best Kiss of that year.
Really?
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Why? Because she's so hot. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, this
non-deservingly. I mean, that's... I can't think of too many other kisses from that year that were... that good.
Now, this is where I was just thrown off by how moved I was.
Yeah.
By this subplot.
I mean,
I was
like,
really thrown off. I was like,
of course,
I'm feeling
yeah.
for this. I'm feeling yeah. for these characters.
And I mean, that's a credit to Bill Pullman and Mary McDonald, and I mean the actors,
David Arnold as well.
David Arnold. And I mean, they do a really good job of making you believe it. I mean, by this time, if you don't complete, I mean, it's one of those things where the fact that they set up the president as a human being as opposed to necessarily your usual, well, I'm not going to go that far. I mean, as opposed to...
Enter
like
the two government officials to drag me away now. I think I have another running gag.
No.
Yeah, this is like, you know, you would not normally give a damn about the president.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, they really did a nice job developing this character. I mean, they say in the DVD sort of production notes inside the case of the DVD that it's like, Will Smith's the heart and Bill Pullman's the soul of this film. And, you know, yeah, you can buy that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jeff Goldblum, obviously, is the brains.
Yeah, this
I'm not hot anymore because she reminds me of an ex-girlfriend.